Now to my good friend, Miss Heather Sharone of TheDailyLine.net. Heather, how you doing? Glad things are so boring and easy right now this week here for you.
It's so boring these dog days of summer, isn't it, John?
Oh, my God. I think the last time we talked about how things had slowed down. And, of course, now Lori Lightfoot with her first 100 days wrapping up yesterday with an interesting talk about the city. And then, of course, she's got a speech tonight, right, Heather? But it's about what she isn't going to say that's making as much news as maybe what she is going to say.
That's right. So we will finally learn, after months and months of speculation, how big the city's deficit actually is and what she initially plans to do about that. However, I know this might surprise you. Chicago mayors are not kings or queens, and she doesn't have the ability to do much of anything, but she can ask the city council and the General Assembly to help her fill that gap. So that's what we expect to hear tonight.
All right, so obviously the number that they're going to give us will have some sticker shock to it, and it probably should. Part of it's because it's maybe not the number that we've been hearing over the last couple of years or months, right? Before, because there was some confusion or at least some disagreements between the passing administration and the incoming administration of what that number truly was.
Right. So when Mayor Rahm Emanuel left office, the last sort of set of budget figures that he released warned Lori Lightfoot or whoever the next mayor was going to be was about $600 million was going to come due to the city's four pension funds. And essentially, state law changed and now requires that those funds be put on a path to being 90% funded by a certain date. And to do that, that means that payment schedule is going to ramp up quite a bit. So we knew that we were sort of starting at a floor of $600 million. And since then, you and I and everybody else with a 401k has sort of watched the stock market go up and down and up and down with everything that's going on in Washington. And that has taken a toll on the city's pension funds, we think. So we think that they hadn't been making their investments quite as much money as had been anticipated. So that added some percentage to the deficit. And then there are what I like to call unknown knowns. We know that the teachers need a new contract. We know that they're in line for somewhere along the lines of a 16% pay raise over the next 4 years or so. So that's going to add to that number, as well as the fact that police and firefighters in Chicago have been working without a contract for more than 2 years at this point. So not only are they going to want a pay raise, as they're probably entitled to, but they're also going to be looking for a retroactive pay raise to the last 2 years. So that's also going to add some percentage to the city's deficit.
What that final number is
really anybody's guess until Lori Lightfoot takes the stage tonight.
I imagine most people are imagining that it'll be over $1 billion. I guess the question I was going to ask, Heather, before I rudely interrupted you, or when I rudely interrupted you, was, so it's not like Mayor Emanuel's administration lied about the number. They just didn't cook the books as fully or didn't play out what we know to be coming up to give the most accurate depiction of it? Is that a good way to interpret it?
You know, everything changes. You know, it's sort of lies, damn lines, and statistics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on how you sort of add up that deficit. I think that what people knew was coming was this Manchin pension bill, and there should be no mistaking the fact that Lori Lightfoot knew that was coming. Everybody in Chicago knew about it. You know, every reporter at City Hall has been writing about it for months. So that wasn't a surprise. I think the question is, how do you bridge the gap that we knew about it, and has that gap significantly widened since then? And the mayor says that it has, and that the city is going to need not only some sort of tax increase, and we don't know exactly what that means, but you will also need help from Springfield in figuring out ways to bridge that gap. And those are all things that are very much up in the air at this point.
I got a dumb question, Heather.
Hit me with it.
I don't know. This one's going to be bad. So there's so let's say it's $1 billion. $1 billion, right?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
There's about a little less than 3 million of us living in this city, right? You divide those two numbers and you get a number that for some people, I mean, look, it comes out to $333 is what I was looking at per resident, which I know to some people that's a lot of money for sure. And I'm not saying it's not a lot of money to me, but I don't know. For in some reason, that it's a big number, but it doesn't seem insurmountable to me for some reason. Am I wrong?
Well, I think it is much bigger than the city has faced any time recently. So if we cast our minds back to 2011, when Rahm Emanuel took office after Mayor Richard Daley had retired, he took office with a budget deficit of about $630 million.
And is that for one individual year, or is that an accumulation of debt?
That was what the city needed in 2011 to balance its books.
Got
and now
it.
The city is not like the federal government. They can't just, you know, sort of operate in the red and, you know, the banks will float them. Certainly the city borrows money, but that it's not as if it can pass an unbalanced budget. That's not how city finances work. So to bridge that gap, Mayor Emanuel had to push through a lot of draconian cuts, the legacy of which we're still dealing with. He closed mental health clinics. He raised fines for not having a city sticker on your car. He, raised fines if you didn't pay that city sticker, ticket. So those are still things that are very much with us. And in many ways, Lori Lightfoot took office promising to reverse a lot of that legacy. And now she's confronted with a budget crisis, which by all accounts is significantly worse than when Mayor Emanuel took office and really sort of said, you know, the city has to take drastic steps to keep it from sort of spiraling into sort of an unsolvable circle of debt. So she's got a really big challenge right in front of her. And like you said, she's only been in office 101 days as of right now.
So she's in a little bit of a corner. And I feel like part of it is she's put herself in that corner, but maybe she wanted to because, and I'll explain that the idea is she's very much for the everyday Chicagoan. She's been working to reduce what those fines are, to limit them a little bit, to really fight for the lower class or middle class workers here in the city. But that does close revenue streams. So the question is, then she's in this corner. Is she going to come forward with new ideas tonight? Is this going to end up with another property tax increase, cutting expenses, which doesn't seem to be like something she's willing or wanting to do? I guess this is the billion dollar question.
Yeah. So she has made sort of small announcements where she said, look, I found $6 million in the Department of Fleet and Facility Management, and we're tightening our belt here, and we're imposing a hiring freeze until we get our arms around what's happening. So she has taken steps, which she says is designed to make city government more efficient and effective, and that's part of what she's going to say tonight, I am sure, you know, to promise the Chicago residents, look, I am making city government work as effectively and as penny-pinchingly as possible, but we still need additional revenue. And what I expect she will say tonight is that she's going to ask Springfield and Governor J.B. Pritzker to allow the city to levy a sales tax on certain services, such as accounting services or high-end legal services, not necessarily like a haircut. So when you get your haircut, you don't pay sales tax like you would if you bought,
just any old good. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that would also help the city raise revenue. I think she will also ask Springfield for the ability to raise the real estate transfer tax, which will be very controversial because homelessness advocates or people trying to get people off the streets of Chicago had hoped the city would raise that tax on high-end sales, so like million-dollar homes, to fund more services to help people get off the street and to break that cycle of homelessness. However, Lori Lightfoot has sort of let it be known that the city's financial condition might be a bit too precarious for that, and she might need that money to help balance the city budget. So that's also a possibility. I think the last resort will be a proposal for a property tax increase, because let's not forget, in 2015, Rahm Emanuel pushed through the biggest property tax increase in Chicago history, which homeowners are now feeling the full brunt of. It was phased in over 4 years to basically keep the city's police and firefighter pensions from falling below required funding levels. So that was also a big ask. And I think that that would be a very difficult vote for many aldermen to take, especially since many of them just faced angry voters in the last election.
And some of them barely survived, and plenty of them didn't. They're not sitting in city council anymore.
That's right.
Why is this coming to a head tonight? Are we at a, like, remind me of the fiscal calendar, or how does it work? I mean, is she talking about a current budget hole that needs to be filled by X time, and then we need to look at a new budget for the next year? Where fiscally on a calendar are we, and why is it tonight that this is kind of coming out?
So typically the city adopts its budget somewhere around Thanksgiving, sometimes a little bit before, sometimes a little bit since. So the city's budget operates on a calendar year, January 1st to December 31st, basis. Typically, during the Rahm Emanuel era, he put out a document that he called the Annual Financial Analysis in late July, basically sort of giving us all a look at sort of what the city's financial condition was.
And this is for fiscal year 2020.
Right, okay. Right. We're through 2019. It might seem like it's still happening, John, but if you're talking about budget, it's over.
We're done.
It's
okay.
Done. It's yesterday's news. So we're focused on 2020, if you can believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So usually in July, late July, we know what the budget situation is. However, Lori Lightfoot asked for more time. She asked for an additional month, and that brings us to tonight, where she's basically going to say, here's the state of our city and our budget, and here's what I think we should do. So in October, she will deliver her formal budget proposal to the city council, and she usually does that. She'll do that with a big speech to the aldermen and in the city council chambers, and then we'll all get the huge, big 700-page budget proposal. And that will kick off a month or so of budget hearings where each department is called before the city council to basically answer aldermen's questions about why they need X amount of money to do Y number of things. And then it will work through the city council process. It will go through a committee. It will go, and then it will go to the full city council for adoption sometime before the start of the actual 2020.
So then I guess, and I'm asking so many formal questions about in terms of this, but it just helps me understand. I imagine some of our listeners too.
Sure.
So is tonight like a trial balloon where she floats some ideas, sees how they play out, and starts negotiating in backroom sessions with aldermen about what they can take, what they can't take, et cetera, before she sends out that proposal in October, that speech in October, so that one lands with a much more unanimous front? Is that what happens in the interim?
I think that's certainly her hope. She will start a series of four citywide budget hearings next week. The first is in my old stomping grounds of Jefferson Park at the Copernicus Center. And she will start that as a sort of a listening tour of I laid out the problem. I gave you what I think we should do. And now she says she wants to hear from members of the community. What's interesting is that is the exact same playbook that Rahm Emanuel used before he pushed through that historic property tax increase to fund police and firefighter pensions, which I should mention passed, overwhelmingly. I think there was maybe a dozen no votes. So it will be interesting to see if that ends up sort of, that playbook ends up working for her the way Rahm Emanuel did. But she came into office promising progressive solutions that would protect the poorest Chicagoans, and she's vowed repeatedly not to balance this budget on the backs of the poorest Chicagoans. The only issue is, of course, is that that's a lot easier to say than to do, especially when you're looking for $1 billion.
Yeah. I think it's really easy sometimes. I shouldn't say easy. I imagine that, especially in this election cycle, the progressive cause was certainly something that a lot of voters favored, especially in the runoff. The results speak for themselves. And I imagine that she was encouraged, and other people were that voted for her, that you also had a few Democratic Socialists voted into office as well, and you get some new aldermen. I just wonder that if there is a catch-22 in that now that she ran on it and now that she helped maybe get some other aldermen into office on those sort of similar promises and the similar that these aldermen who are there now, they're going to hold their feet to the fire. It almost ends up being like, all right, you made these promises, you're in office, but so are we, and now we get to challenge you on this too, and we're going to be loud about it.
Absolutely, and you have six members of the city council who are members of the Democratic Socialists of America who were voted into office promising a break from the old version of Chicago Democratic politics. And what's sort of, I think, an untalked about enough issue is that Lori Lightfoot was basically only endorsed endorsed by one alderman before the runoff, and that was Scott Wagstaff, who's the new finance committee chair, who I'm sure will play a big role in pushing through whatever budget agreement comes to be. But, you know, she's not somebody who owes her position to any of the aldermen, and very few of the aldermen really owe their victory to her, which is really an unprecedented situation in Chicago history. However, the flip side of that is of course, that she won every single ward in the runoff in April, and she won 75% of the vote. So there may be an alderman who might not really like what she comes forward with or whatever the final proposal happens to be, which of course depends, I should add, on whether these proposals can get through Springfield, which has historically been relatively reluctant to approve anything that smacks of a Chicago bailout, whether they don't sort of just bite the bullet and say, look, she won citywide, she won my ward, she won everybody's ward, maybe I should get in line. Now, that would be very in keeping with Chicago politics, but I don't know if it will actually happen this time around.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, I guess you could say, if it turns out that way. Heather, just a couple more minutes. We did the news clip question a couple days ago, I believe it was about grading Lori Lightfoot's first 100 days. Not going to ask you to do that. You're an independent journalist, so I don't ask you to assign a letter grade, but I guess as you look back on the first 100 days, it's certainly been an interesting one. Your couple quick takeaways.
Well, certainly the honeymoon is over. I think the second she takes that podium tonight, sort of the era of good feelings, such as it was, will be over because these are hard and tough questions. So I think it's interesting to look at what she spent her initial political capital on, which was pushing through ethics reforms that had been stalled really dating back to 2016. And that basically gave the Inspector General a significant amount more power to oversee the city council and aldermen. And of course, that all comes as there are at least three and perhaps infinity number of corruption investigations swirling around City Hall. She also pushed through a scheduling ordinance that will require businesses to give their employees more notice of their schedules. And that was something that the labor community and the progressive community wanted very, very badly, but was unable to push through under Rahm Emanuel. And, you know, she also sort of put people on notice with the force of her personality that things were going to be very different. You know, I still, you know, catch my breath when I think about her tangling with Ed Burke at her very first city council meeting and basically telling the alderman of 50 years, who of course is now facing an indictment for corruption that he has pled not guilty to basically sit down and that she would call on him in, you know, when she was good and ready. So she's certainly set a new tone and she's certainly notched a number of legislative victories. I think the question is, does this budget deficit take all of the air out of the room to do other things that she has said she's wanted to, such as including pushing the minimum wage in Chicago to $15 by 2021 instead of 2025, where it will go to $15 throughout the state? So there are still big, heavy, non-budget lifts on her agenda. I think the big question for the next several months is how much else can she do while we're all sort of focused on this massive budget deficit and the city's sort of need to fund its pensions in a way that it really hasn't ever done.
Campaign in poetry, govern in prose. Mario Cuomo had it right. Heather Sharon, thedailyline.net. Remind everyone what they can find there.
TheDailyLine.net should be your one-stop shop of politics at the county, the city, and the state level. And I think this is the first time I've spoken to you, John, that another one of our former DNA Info colleagues, Alex Nitkin, has joined us at The Daily Line, and he will be covering Cook County and land use policy. And that is very exciting for us at The Daily Line.
That's great stuff. Heather, and one last thing I'll leave you with. The texter said, when I was referring to my number of $333 per person, texter politely reminded me that a lot of those are kids, and a lot of us have those kids, and they don't get to pay for it on their own. I know you would appreciate that, too.
I do appreciate that.
I hadn't factored that into the equation. Oh, yeah, that's right. Some of y'all have, like, five kids out there.
We should really bring back child labor. I think that's a platform you could run for office on, John. Yeah. I think that would...
And here at the start of Labor Day weekend, no better time for that. Heather Sharon, thanks so much for joining us.